And welcome, friends, to this, the Wednesday morning edition of the Grace Hour. We're broadcasting live here from our studios, which are located at the home of the Greater Grace World Outreach in Baltimore, Maryland. Thanks for joining us, friends. Great to have you with us on this Wednesday morning. And we want to remind you that as we begin our broadcast today, we will open the phone lines and you can join us during the broadcast. That's one of the unique opportunities that the Grace Hour affords its listeners. You can participate. You can weigh in, share your thoughts with us, whether it be a question or a comment. You can pick up the phone, dial one of these numbers, and join us on our broadcast. Here are the telephone numbers, 800-338-7060, which is a toll-free number throughout all of North America. And if you're joining us locally in the Baltimore area, you would dial 410-483-3700. And we welcome your calls, your comments, your questions. If you can't pick up the phone and join us, you'd like to weigh in, share your thoughts on the chat, you can do that if you're listening online. But we do want to thank you for joining us. And we do want to remind you not to forget to subscribe to the show on YouTube, Apple Podcast, Google Podcast, Spotify, and more. And let others know that you join in, well, perhaps you join us each and every day, Monday through Friday, at this time to participate and to sit back and enjoy what we offer here on the Grace Hour. This week, of course, we're talking about parenting. And the question is, are you up for it? Well, if you're a parent, I don't really think you have a choice. You have to be up for it. And you have to be willing to, again, make that investment in the lives of your children because Pastor Barry, by the way, my name is Pastor John Love. Joining me in the studio today, Pastor Barry Quirk. Nobody's going to make the contribution in the life of a child more so than their parents. I mean, there are other contributions, but you could almost say that they're fractional contributions, whether it be the teacher, the counselor, the coach, the music director. I mean, it could be any number of individuals that are making these fractional contributions in the life of the young person, but nobody's going to make the investment or the contribution that the parents are going to make in the life of their child.
Yeah, I would say that's 100% accurate. The upbringing of a child, you know, and I remember those first day of my daughter was home, you know, from the hospital and holding her in my arms and saying, this is such an unbelievable miracle. It's amazing. What am I going to do for the next 18 years of this kid's life? And there really is a commitment in the beginning, especially the foundational commitment. And it is a huge sacrifice for the mom, especially, who is, you know, tenderly taking care of the child in the beginning, despite her body and her emotions feeling like that should not be the case. And then for the longer run, you know, the mom and dad or whoever is involved in that picture being able to invest in a child so that they can raise them up in the way that they should go, as we see in Proverbs 22:6, so that they won't depart from that way later on in life. And it is a fantastic commitment, and it is a full-time job. And yes, those other areas that are so important are fractional compared to the incredible investment that a parent is required.
Tremendous responsibility.
It is.
To bring children into this world and then to raise them, as you said, in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. And I think that there's something to be said about that as we begin our broadcast today, that parents really have to make that decision that they're not just going to raise children, but they're going to rear them up in the nurture and the admonition of the Lord. They're going to be pouring something into them that's eternal, mm-hmm. that's going to last longer than a lifetime.
Yeah.
It's going to carry them through into their next more real life, which is eternity with God. Mm. So, I mean, that's a great responsibility. And we have that responsibility. Now, oftentimes, we've talked to a lot of parents. We know a lot of parents. We could be those parents who have raised their children, and then maybe they see their children, you know, move in a completely different direction.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, it can be heartbreaking. They can wonder, you know, what did they do wrong? But I think if any parent can look back and say, look, we did what we could have done.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like, I think of the woman with the alabaster box, you know, she broke it, she poured it out upon Jesus. The disciples were angry, upset. This could have been sold, money given to the poor. And then Jesus said, leave her alone. She has done what she could.
Yes.
And I think that sometimes as parents, if we can say, look, I did what I could, we have to remember that even though there are children, they're really God's children.
Mm-hmm.
And we have to be able to kind of, you know, disassociate ourselves in that sense and say they really belong to God. In many cases, like we have here in our ministry, we have a what we call a baby dedication,
mm-hmm.
where we just commit them to the Lord. And then as parents, we do the best that we can. And sometimes I think a lot of parents, as we said, they can condemn themselves. They can beat themselves up. They can say, we must not have done the best job that we could have. We should have done more. I mean, on and on, the questions, the doubts, the fears go. But we just have to commit them to God, don't we?
We really do. And if I had a dollar for every time a parent apologized to me for their behavior of their child in the middle school or the high school, or even the elementary school for that matter, I'd be a rich man. And oftentimes when they're apologizing to me, I have to say to them, did you do something as well? Should I be disciplining you also? Because the reality of the picture is that they are doing what they can to invest in the child. The child's a child. And the difference between a child and adult is years of age, experience, the school of hard knocks, learning through our failures. But those are things that happen over time. And for a parent to apologize that their child hasn't arrived yet at the completion is that's not a valid complaint, you know, really or apology. I say to them, you're doing the best you can, exactly as you just said, you're raising them in the Lord, and they're learning how to navigate through life. And this failure is actually a great teacher. Failure can be a teacher for many things. You know, we learn how to do the right thing by, well, look at Thomas Edison, you know, how many times did he mess up before he actually discovered electricity, or how many, you know, we consider some of our greatest sports heroes or, you know, people who have achieved things, and they are Babe Ruth, you know, home run record. How many strikeouts did he have? Thousands and thousands and thousands, right? But he's recognized for his achievement. It takes a process to get there. One of the things I like about this principle, when we think about the Apostle Paul, who faced antinomianism in his ministry, and of course we know that means, you know, against the law. And people could transfer that into a parenting situation and say, you know, that I don't need to have strict coverage in their lives because, you know, we're in a grace era and we don't need to have the law. That's the wrong approach. You know, a disobedient child who has no correction is set up for failure later in life, you know? So it's a big topic, and obviously we're not going to get to cover it all in 40 minutes here today on the show, but I think it should set in motion in our hearts maybe the thought process of how could I approach this with God's mind instead of just settling into something and kind of going with the flow, but having a purpose and a plan in it, and also knowing that our kids could be strong-willed, you know, and that's really the episode that we're talking about today, is stretching your limits as a parent because of the possibility of strong-willed children and how do we approach them?
Yeah. I mean, some parents, you know, they raise passive children, and then other parents, they're called upon to raise strong-willed children.
Yes.
The thing that strikes me about just parenting in general is it really doesn't matter, you know, how well they start out.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, isn't that the case? I mean, recently, I think it was just last weekend, you had the running of the New York City Marathon. And you've got thousands and thousands and thousands of people gathered
yes.
at the starting point. And they look good and they look fresh. And mm-hmm. they've got all the right clothing and the running gear and everything. And very impressive looking, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them are outrageous and they're just in it for the fun of it. But others are, they're runners, they're serious,
yes.
they're trained, they've prepared. But starting out good is it's good if you're able to, but isn't it all about finishing well?
Absolutely.
And I think, you know, the final chapters in many of children's lives are yet to be determined, yet to be written. And I think that we just have to kind of, you know, believe God and trust God for their futures, because if you're able to make, you know, the right investment. And I think, Pastor Barry, wouldn't you say this too? Because I know that we grew up in the ministry, and we, you know, whether it was purposely done or it was not purposely done, there were always families that were kind of presented before us as, you know, here's your ideal family.
Yeah.
Here's your ideal children. This is what you want your family to look like. Only to watch those families fall apart in the future.
Yeah.
So, I mean, do yourselves a favor, parents. Don't compare yourselves with others.
Right.
Don't walk away from parenting and think, you know, we would have turned out great if we weren't such a dysfunctional family. Everybody's got a dysfunctional family.
Absolutely.
Everybody's normal, or so we think, until you get to know them.
Yes.
And then you realize every family has problems, troubles, tests, trials, issues. This is right across the board. So, you know, do yourself a big favor and don't compare yourself to other families.
Right.
Because you don't walk in their shoes and they don't walk in your shoes. And the dynamics are going to be completely different from one family to the next.
Yeah, we all have our flaws. There's no question about it. And actually, you know, we take steps in our in raising our children to try to have the impact that God would desire of us. The fact of the matter is, and from our background in ministry and in the school, we can tell you that not all children are the same. They don't all respond the same. You know, it's interesting that a student who is pushed into compliance all the time, comply, 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 be a wallflower, don't stand out, they're going to end up as an adult that complies, 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 and is a wallflower and doesn't stand out. And they might have so much passivity that they have no ability to lead anything. They must be led everywhere they go and all the time. And I just think it's very interesting that having a strong-willed child doesn't automatically mean that you have an ill-behaved child. It means, you know, you might have to adjust your parenting to accommodate their kind of unshakable spirit. But the reality is, and actually I read one study, that a 40-year study, that found that children who were labeled as rule breakers or defiant were more likely to become overachieving and financially successful adults. And we see this, that it's the people who, you know, aren't afraid to push back that end up being leaders. Now, it's our job as parents to determine what that means when there's pushback. And I like this kind of equation in my mind that I thought about here is that, you know, a place of having a disagreement or a discussion as a parent and a child is different than having disobedience and defiance, right? If a kid feels like they have no place to discuss anything with us, then of course they're going to rebel in their hearts, because we are rebellious people. And if they inherited my genes, then they're going to be the exact same way. They're going to rebel as well. So if I know that I can have a reasonable discussion, and it's not unlimited, it's with parameters, and at some point there is a time when we say, look, I appreciate what you've asked and what you've said, but the bottom line is, this is how we're led by God to lead, and that's the way it's going to be in our family. And someday maybe you'll understand that. If you do or you don't, this is what we're going to do. And that's perfect, right? But generally that happens after we take the time to say, why do you feel like that? Why are you defiant in that area? What is it that's causing you to not want to do what mom and dad have talked about you doing? And maybe we learned something from that. Maybe we learned that there's something that's bothering them that's either related or unrelated that we could address in a way that might help them. That's part of wisdom, I think, you know. And this is really what Isaiah 1:18, the Lord says to us, come, let us reason together. Now, when I think about that, and I kind of chuckled when I was reading that this morning, like the Lord is telling us, let's reason together. I mean, there's only one thing in the entire world that's absolute, and it's God. And who are we, right? And yet the Lord says, come on, let's sit down and think about this and talk about this. Now, his purpose in it is not that we'll change his mind, but his purpose in it is that we'd understand his heart and his mind so that we'd have a heart and an attitude that acts the same way. So really, this is kind of a glimpse into how we could do things with our children. Are they going to understand everything from the get-go? Of course not. They haven't learned everything. Do they have, you know, defiant spirits? Does it appear like they're defiant? Well, maybe, but there's a lot of strategies that we can employ to help that, you know, like, for instance, somebody, little kid wants to pick out their clothes in the morning. You know, I could fight that. And actually, when on the weekends growing up, when Kendall was in my care, when we'd take her to CYA soccer, she would often show up with very mismatched clothing, flowered tops and striped bottoms or whatever. And my wife would say, what are you doing to that poor child? But, you know, I gave her that little option. But maybe a better move would have been to say, these three kind of things match with these three kind of things. Hey, Kendall, pick out any one of these shirts and tops that you, you know, and bottoms that you'd like. So that's kind of fail-proof. She gets the buy-in. I don't look like the dumb moronic father that can't match clothing. So there are strategies. We're not saying that, you know, you're never, if you're a parent who has a defiant child, that you're doing something wrong no, you have one of those members of the body in particular that has a strong will that could be used to the glory of God.
Yeah.
Right. And,
yeah.
Or it could be used the opposite way if we don't give them the reasoning that they need from the Lord to be able to make those decisions, what's profitable and what's not.
Mm. I read a quote from a former first lady, the wife of President Lyndon Johnson, Lady Bird Johnson. She said that children are apt to live up to what you believe of them.
Oh,
it's a good statement, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is.
I mean, I think as far as a parent is concerned, if a parent can see, have a vision for their children, and I don't mean with the particulars, you know,
right.
You're like, you're going to be a doctor. And then, of course, you know, you lock into that and they're not going to, you can't, you know, they don't have an option
right.
except to be a doctor.
Right.
No, but you're going to be, you're going to be successful in whatever avenue you choose to walk down.
Yes.
You know, you're going to, you have this ability. I mean, because strong-willed children, you know, they can be independent, determined, passionate, headstrong. But as you said a few moments ago, but this could be all of the impetus that they need to become leaders.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So rather than saying, oh, this is not good, you know, we need to think about maybe putting them on some kind of medication. And we're not, by the way, we're not physicians. We're not doctors.
Right.
It's not our place to suggest that or
we
to
don't
say
even play
that.
One on TV.
No. And just to, for the record, we're not, you know, experts in parenting at all. You know, if God were giving out grades for parenting, I might not have gotten a good one. Mm. I mean, all I ever hoped for is that my children would learn to trust God with their lives.
Yeah.
And I'd like to see them attending church on a consistent, regular basis.
Right.
Whichever church they choose to be a part of, as long as they're preaching the gospel of the grace of God and they're hearing a message that builds them up and reminds them of what God says about them, what God thinks about them, and the plan and purpose that he has for their lives.
Because we care.
Yeah, because we care. That's all. I mean, it doesn't have to be, you know, here's my box. You have to fit into my box.
Right.
It doesn't have to be that.
Right.
I want you to walk with God.
Yes.
The most important decision you will ever make in life is walking with God.
It's absolutely, like, what better thing could we teach our child than to find out what God's will is for their life and do it? Right. And no matter what that means. And
yeah,
I love the fact that I did get pushed back. You know, my daughter growing up, and I'm sorry to keep using her, and she'll let me know if she hears this, but, but, you know, she had a thought process that she wanted to do something career wise, and it's going to be demanding. And I tried to throw ice water on it many occasions just so that there was a reality involved, that this wasn't just excitement or, you know, drawn to something, but that it was actually, I have a conviction about this and this is what I'm going to do. And when she finally voiced that to me and said, look, Dad, I really believe this is God's will for my life, I jumped on board wholeheartedly. What can I do to help you? Because I wanted that to be the case. I've been involved in things for the excitement of it. And then the reality of the situation hits and you go, oh my gosh, what did I do this for? But if you're in the will of God in your life, then when the trials hit you in the face, you're prepared but to say, okay, if God called me in to these details, then he's also faithful to give me the provision that I need to get through them. And I think parents, first of all, parents who have strong-willed children, God bless you. You're our heroes. It's so easy to judge a parent. It is so easy to see a situation, to see a child acting up, and to think, they wouldn't do that in my home. You know, and how many times have I uttered that in my own heart?
Mm-hmm.
only to realize that, you know, maybe they would, and maybe it would be worse. And maybe that parent is exercising some wisdom that I don't even see. It doesn't mean that we have, you know, let's throw a temper tantrum in the store. And how many kids have you seen throw a temper tantrum? I watched something the other day where a parent laid down next to his kid on the floor and started throwing a temper tantrum next to him. And the kid was so appalled that he got up off the floor.
Yeah.
He said,
like, what are you doing?
What are you doing? You can't do that. And he just took away that whole, you know, defense mechanism that this child was using to manipulate his parents.
Yeah.
And I just think that was wisdom. You know, that was really, it's applied wisdom. It's amazing.
Mm. You know, these days, parenting is such a challenge.
Yes, it
sometimes is. An overwhelming task, because, you know, you think about it, when we grew up, there wasn't, you know, we weren't dealing with social media.
Right.
We weren't, you know, our cell phones hadn't become a part of our physical bodies, like attached to them 24/7. The peer pressure, no doubt it existed, but today it's even more profound and more pronounced. You have young people with poor self-images because they can't come to grips with just finding out who God says they are and deriving an identity from Him, so they start to look among their peers to find out who they are. Mm. There's so many challenges that young people face today. So I like the way, you know, James Dobson described it when he's talking about adolescence. Mm-hmm. He said, look, in terms of the vast understanding he had about child rearing and raising strong-willed children, I think he even authored a book along those lines, was simply this. You just got to jump in with them and just be there until they get through this difficult period of their lives.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yes.
You just jump right in the foxhole, so to speak, with them and say, I'll be with you until we get through this together.
Yeah. Actually, people are afraid to be empathetic of their kids in those situations. What we need to realize is that our kids actually can respond to our empathy in a situation and our understanding of the emotion of a situation. Like, when a parent sees a reaction, he has one of two ways he could deal with that. He could try to shut it down by the might of his hand, which oftentimes just produces deeper rebellion in the heart, even if he gets the response he wants immediately. Or he can say, listen, I understand this is, you know, you're upset about this and it seems unfair to you. Well, let's calm down together, and then we'll sit and we'll talk, and we'll consider why it is that this thing happened, and we'll help you develop some strategies so that it won't happen again in the future. But maybe the reality is your decision led you to this place, and I want you to understand that that decision had a bad consequence. And some things that I've read about child rearing have talked about how kids who are strong-willed will bump up against decisions and actually test those decisions repetitively to see if there's a different response. And ultimately, when they find out there really is not a good response to the situation, they reasonably think through it and they say, I don't want to go down that road again. I've been there enough. You know, I've been shocked by that button. I'm not going to keep pressing it. but it takes a time. It takes time. And you know, the thought about, well, how much time do you take and how patient should you be and how do you exhibit the fruit of the Spirit in your parenting skills with strong-willed parents, and I would strong-willed children, I would say the same way we exhibit the fruit of Spirit in any way in our life. We wait upon God. We don't discipline in anger, right? It's so easy for me to want to just deal with a situation immediately, and I really am thankful I've employed this kind of strategy where, as a parent or as a principal of a school, I get parent feedback. And oftentimes it's incomplete in its scope. Maybe they have a very strong one-sided opinion because they've seen it through the eyes of their children. And I want to just enlighten them on the situation immediately. And I type out where I'm a response, and then I put it in my outbox. And then I come back the next morning and I reread it. And when I've reread it, I go, oh my gosh, I was so reactionary. There's way too much emotion. There's unnecessary. These are people that already know our hearts and trust us, and maybe they were upset in the moment, and God spares us from giving some kind of interaction that would be harmful.
Yeah.
And so when we're disciplining our kids, one expert I read said, have the parent take a timeout.
Yeah.
You know, like it's easy to say, you need a timeout for the kid. And they do. Maybe they do. You need to sit and think about your actions. But in the meantime, how about if I'm quiet and I'm thinking with God and saying, what's the real issue here? Mm. I saw the response. You know, I saw the acting out. And I could try to address the behavior. But if I'm not addressing the heart, then what am I even wasting my time doing?
Yeah.
And real change, as we know, Pastor Love, happens from the inside out and not from the outside in.
Yeah.
We can't behaviorally construct a child into, you know, having a heart attitude difference. A pig outside of the mud is still a pig, and it'll go right back into the mud if we let him go.
Yeah. So true. And I think something needs to be said, too. We think, as when we were younger and we were raising children when they were younger, we have to realize too that, you know, they were experiencing a learning curve, but so weren't we.
Of course.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, we might not have, and I know some people might, or they do, they take these, you know, child rearing courses, but even the people that take those courses, those classes, or read those books, or read all of the literature that's available in helping mm-hmm. to raise your children, oftentimes your child breaks the mold.
Yeah, of course.
Your child is nothing like all the scenarios that are described in those books and all of that material. And so you're left like, well, what am I going to do? Well, you're going to trust God. You're going to learn to lean upon God as you raise your children. And like you said, maybe the adults, the parents themselves need to take those time outs and say, let me think this through.
Yeah.
Let me really consider what I'm going to say or how am I going to approach this situation with my strong-willed child.
Yeah.
Because as you said, if you're dealing with symptoms, there's no end to that.
There isn't.
You want to get to the root of the problem.
Right. And if I'm waiting on the Lord, then my strength is renewed. If I'm operating quickly in the energy of the flesh, then I'm zapped. I don't even have anything to offer my kid. And I'm operating in frustration and anger just like they are. But we're the adults in the situation. Sometimes we have to remind ourselves. And I do recall having a spat with my daughter once again when she was about 3 years old. She wanted me to cook her eggs in the morning, and I made her eggs, but it wasn't what she had in her mind because mom probably made her something different. And when I brought her the eggs, she was like, I don't want that. And it was like, oh, no, you're eating that. I cooked it. You know, and I had this five-minute battle with her over it before I realized, wait a minute, hold on. She's three. I'm a lot older than three. Mm-hmm. Why am I having this argument? This is foolish. And I just said, oh, you don't want eggs? Okay, fine. Let's go on with our day. No big deal. But we are, as you said, we are learning. And we learn by our mistakes sometimes. And that's why it's beautiful to have friends, other believers in the church, more experienced people in the church, people who can make decisions, who have gone through these decisions, who will, you know, be a good counsel, source of counsel for us. At the end of the day, we got to give ourselves a lot of grace. Yeah. Our kids learn when we fail and we come back and say, wow, I messed that up. Forgive me. I'd like to take another approach at this. Would you give me permission to do that? They just learned something about us.
Yeah.
They learned, you know, I'm not playing a dad. I'm going to be a dad. And that means that dads sometimes make mistakes just like kids make mistakes, and we can all come to God and get a fresh start. Lamentations 3:22-23, His mercies are brand new every day. We wouldn't need new mercies every day unless we were miserable failures.
Sure.
But we are.
Yeah.
And thank God that He gives us brand new mercy. Now, that puts us in a place where He doesn't see us as a failure anymore. But the practicality is we're not perfect. We one day will be when we're with Him. He sees us as though we're perfect, but we're growing in grace and knowledge of Christ the whole time.
Amen. And it begs the question, you know, how what's the impact of a gospel-centered life in terms of impacting the attitude mm-hmm. and of a strong-willed child? And I think that a lot can be said about this particular, the answer to this question. Because modeling a Christ-like life, and again, we want to say it again, modeling a Christ-like life does not mean you're impeccable, that you're perfect, that you don't fail, that you cannot make mistakes. It just simply means, as you said a moment ago, when you do fail, you just say, look, I made a mistake. Yeah. I reacted. I blew it. I should have responded. Instead, I reacted, and I want to apologize. I mean, that sends a message to a young person that, well, okay, if he's not perfect, then maybe I shouldn't be looking for perfection in my own life.
Right.
It gives them hope, in other words.
Yes.
But the modeling of a Christ-like life, which let's talk about what that means.
Mm-hmm.
I think as far as a schedule is concerned, it means that in the minds of your children, they see a godly scale of priorities.
Mm.
Church is a priority in our home and family.
Yes.
We're going to be there, in our case, three times a week, if at all possible.
Yeah.
Having a time of devotion or meditation or prayer, that's critical. That's important. We're going to incorporate that into our family life as well. I mean, there are so many great things that we can incorporate into a Christ-centered life.
Right.
But seeing that, really watching it happen in real time as a child observing their parents is so important, isn't it?
We grow up learning from what's modeled to us, right?
Yes,
and in so many areas of our life, that's true. Our parents, as we mature, they kind of, they grow in their ability to communicate with us in ways that are more mature. But we really learn how to carry ourselves as a child by watching what our parents do. And along those lines, one of the most beautiful parts of that is that to create a gospel culture in your family really means that I would say your worth is not dependent upon your performance. Just like the gospel says to us that it's the blood of Christ, it's the perfection that he provides for us that God views us in, right? He doesn't see us after our failures any longer. And our child needs to know that when they fail, that doesn't make them a failure, you know? It's an event, and we've talked about this many times, but how about a parent that sees their child and says, sure, they failed in this area, but that just means they need more instruction in that area, right? Like, they just need, they've never been down this road before. I get little second and third graders, and they come in, and they're upset because they did something wrong or didn't understand the lesson, and I say to them, how many times have you been a third grader? They're like, oh, this is the first time. I'm like, well, congratulations, you're learning then, right? Mm-hmm. At the end of the year, you'll have completed third grade. But for right now, you have not completed third grade. And in our lives, when we blow it, God doesn't say, you're no longer useful to me. He says, I'm going to teach you a lesson even in your failure. And it might be that you know my love even greater because of something outside of your own good judgment or even ability, right? That we couldn't help. We fall all over ourselves. We fail. And then God says, look, I have a better way. Let me show you that better way. In the meantime, I love you, right?
Yeah.
And this is, if we can be a parent that says to our kids, your worth is not based on your performance. It's based on my love. Mm-hmm. And yes, I'm going to help you with your performance because it's a reflection of who you are in your heart, the convictions that you have in your heart. That's important. But your circumstances that's acted out upon is not going to be what makes you valuable. Even good or even bad, it's not going to be who you are. Who you are is going to be who you are by the grace of God.
Amen. Yeah. Well, friends, you can join us. We'd love to hear what your thoughts are about this theme and subject. And maybe if some of you, our listeners, raised strong-willed children. And some of you might say, yeah, but I don't want to talk about it. But maybe you could share some principles and shed some light on some thoughts that we've talked about or that you would like to insert into the conversation that would help some others. Because, again, it's going to be helpful to some of our listeners tuning into the broadcast today. You can join us live. Pick up a phone. 800-338-7060 is the toll-free number in all of North America and locally here in the Baltimore area. You could join us at 410-483-3700.
I have a question for you, Pastor Love.
Okay.
Do you think Jesus was a strong-willed child?
That's a tough one because when you're talking about Jesus, even as a child, you got to keep in mind that he was God. But, I mean, he grew. The Bible tells us that he grew in wisdom and knowledge and in stature and in favor with God and man.
Yeah.
I think that he submitted to his parents' authority while he was under their under their rule, under their roof, so yeah. to speak. And I think he did so in a profound way. Now, there are the exceptions, of course, mm-hmm. when they went to Jerusalem and they were separated. And yeah. upon their return to Nazareth, they realized Jesus wasn't with them.
Exactly.
And they went back. And it seems, based upon the narrative, that Mary scolded him mm-hmm. and said, you know, why have you done this to us?
Yeah.
And that's when he said, look, I've been about my father's business.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
of course, Mary must have looked at Joseph, and Joseph must have looked at Mary and said, don't ask me. Yeah. I'm still wondering how he got here.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yes, exactly. I mean, obviously, yeah. you had those moments where his divinity yeah. was shining through.
Yes.
But I think, I don't know, I could see Jesus, and this is just my speculation, but I could see him being very compliant.
Yep.
Very submissive,
yeah.
very willing to do any and all that his parents requested of him. Then, of course, in his divinity, you know, moving in his direction and what yeah. he knew was the will of God for his life. So I would say he was probably quite a child to raise.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, I feel bad. Part of me thinks, Mary, you know, was there ever a time that you, like, I don't know whether to give him milk or praise,
yeah, I know.
Right? I can't figure out which
I know.
One to do.
Very. And actually, you answered that question impeccably. I think that the definition, it just helps us to define again that his will to honor his father in heaven was his priority, and it never really went against what his parents' will for him on earth was, except that he did go ahead beyond his years probably, and he was about his father's business when they're worried about his practical safe keeping.
Sure.
But the reality is that it wasn't rebellion. It was exercising the leadership that God, as God, that he had in his life. And I just think, again, it just goes to reiterate that, you know, a strong will doesn't mean a defiant or ill-behaved. It just means that there's something in them that says, I am moved to do this. And so, because we're dealing with people with sin natures and not Jesus, mm-hmm. you know, we have a little different take on things and we have a little more requirement in them. But also, isn't there a place to, like, put the leadership tools on the table and then let the kids kind of learn with them mm-hmm. and make their decisions? And I remember being challenged as a kid when I'd say to my dad, hey, Dad, I'd like to go do this thing. And he'd say, well, I tell you, you know what my convictions are on that. We've spent time. I've talked to you. Taught you, you got to make up your own decision on that. And that was the worst, because I couldn't just say, I'm rebelling and going anyways. It was like, wow, he really did. He taught me how to make those decisions. And now if I make a bad decision, it's against my own better judgment. Mm-hmm. And I just think it's something that we could, you know, we can grow in. And I'm appreciative of that kind of leadership. You know, it's like for somebody to just say, you know, no, this is the way it is. There's the two sides of it are the legalistic way, which mm-hmm. is my way or the highway. Mm-hmm. And good luck with that, because the moment that they have the ability to, the highway will probably be the way they choose.
Yeah.
Or the other side is the antinomian way, which says there's no law, there's no rule, you're free to do whatever, there's no guidance, it's all grace, which will also just lead to lasciviousness, right?
Yeah, of course.
So what do? Well, we're led by the Spirit. We are the full counsel of God is present in our development of our children. And we want to make decisions that are, you know, God's convictions with God's grace understood in the situation, that here's what I want for you. This is the way I have for you. Walk you in it. But when you don't, I'm going to be there to help you pick up, dust your feet off, and get right back up and go, right? We learn how to ride the bicycle. We fall off the bicycle. Mm-hmm. It doesn't say you loser, you're never getting back on that bicycle.
Mm-hmm.
He helps us, puts a Band-Aid on her knee and says, let's get back on the bicycle. By the way, this time don't stop pedaling when yeah. you slow down, right?
Yeah. Oh, so, yeah. Beautiful. Yeah, and I think when you confront that question of is it going to be legalism or grace, that's not a fair question, because you have to have boundaries.
Yes.
You have to have what Pastor Stevens used to refer to as norms and standards.
Yes.
Because that's only helping your child because they're never going to move forward into their futures
right.
without boundaries and norms and standards, mm-hmm. right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you're going to find that in the workplace. You're going to find that in the college classroom. You're going to find out that there's responsibility everywhere you go in life.
Yeah.
And you're going to have to submit to authority, whether it's your boss at the workplace or the military commander, you know, in your ranks.
Yeah, right on.
So it's present. So again, if it's just like you said, if it's just pure legalism, you know, rules without a relationship always leads to rebellion.
Yep, exactly.
You've got to have a relationship with your children.
Yes.
Keep the norms, keep the standards, talk about the boundaries, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
But don't make these hard, fast rules. You know, if you break them, you know, then it's over.
Yeah.
Because that's only going to force them into a rebellious
spirit. Setting them up for failure.
Absolutely.
It really is. And also, it punishes you for having to do something that's not even in your heart to do it.
Yeah.
And, you know, what are some practical things, Pastor Love, that a parent could do while implementing these things? Because it's a process. And sometimes the Spirit of God ministers something to us. I can approach this in this direction. Why don't you do it this way? I'm so thankful for that. One of the ways I know I'm called to be the principal at the school is when I leave my house every morning, I go, oh, Lord, I have no idea what I'm doing. Could mm-hmm. you please help me?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And I don't say that to be familiar with it. I just mean that there are a lot of challenges. These are real life kids. It's not case studies
exactly.
where it's, if you do this and press that button, this result will happen.
Yeah.
These are unpredictable, volatile, potentially situations, but they're also extremely redeemable, you know, beautiful opportunities for counsel that maybe will stick with them for life. Mm-hmm. And they'll sit back and go, wow, when I was in trouble, the Lord gave me some counsel and it helped me. Now I can do that same thing in my kids' lives or in the ministry that I'm in. Mm. So these are like amazing things. And I don't approach it at all with familiarity or think that I know what to do. Each counseling session, each, you know, student interaction, I'm thinking, Lord, I really need your thoughts on this. So, but some of the things that could maybe help us in the Isaiah 118, come let us reason together part is we could be calm, right? We don't have to be angry. We could be calm. We can be clear. Right? In our parenting, mm-hmm. We can be consistent, which is, now, does every situation demand the same exact punishment? No, it doesn't. But the consistency is that we will address situations when they need to be addressed, and they will be addressed, right? That my kid knows, I'm not doing that, because if I do that, this result happens. Just like when we press that button and we get a shock. No matter how many times you press that button, you're still going to get a shock. After a while, you start to realize, why would I do this? There's a consequence that I don't enjoy, right? And it's going to happen with consistent effort. Now, does the shock need to be stronger so that you get that message shorter? You know, that's the be led by God part of it. Yeah. And, you know, by the way, we know this, the adage, spare the rod and spoil the child. And actually, the Bible does say that a man who spares the rod hates his own child. Mm-hmm. But really, more than us advocating for beating your kids, we're saying that the rod of discipline, the rod of having an approach in somebody's life that provides them with the guidelines that they need, mm-hmm. if you don't have that in a child's life, then you're setting them up for absolute failure. So
right.
So in the confines of those, that structure, that discipline is a lot of liberty in life. You know, this is the thing that sometimes we get wrong. We think, oh, if I give them construct, then I'm limiting their creativity or their, no, actually the inside of the, and by the way, kids flourish when they mm-hmm. have definition.
Yeah.
Inside of that definition, they can have a ball.
Yeah.
You know, but if they're always testing what's on the other side of that definition, because you've never been comfortable enough to sit down and have that conversation, well, I'll tell you what's on the other side of that, death.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right? You step into this area, it's death, or shh, we don't talk about what's on the other side. You know, if somebody told me my whole life, shh, don't think about what's out there, the second you have the opportunity, you're going out there to find out what's out there.
Yeah.
But thank God that He gives us the ability to say, nope, you know, this is what we have. So, and then the last thing is follow through when you have these kinds of disciplines, and then delegate some control. I love that we could say to our kids, you know, one kid might come home and say, I do not want to do my homework when I get home from school. I've been working all day. I want to, and you go, okay, so let me give you an option. Would you like to do it when you get home from school? You can go change, have a snack, do your homework now, or do you want to wait until you eat dinner? And then right after dinner, we'll set you up at your desk. Which one would you prefer to do? Mm-hmm. Right? And give them some input in it. Now, if they don't do well in one of those two things, and you've had a few times where they've made that decision, then the next step is to sit down with them and go, okay, let's think this through. How enjoyable was it when you did it after dinner? How enjoyable was it when you did it before dinner? Mm-hmm. If you deferred and then you couldn't play with your friends or you couldn't, you know, watch that sporting event or whatever it is, did that work out well for you? Like there's a form of evaluating and helping them through it. And Absolutely. These are just things we learn. And you know, we teach and we reinforce with empathy and humility, right? Yeah. Like, hey, listen, I know you're not feeling well, but what would be the most glorious thing to God? Mm-hmm. How could we do things that would be in a way that would glorify God? These are important lessons.
Yeah, and these are important questions to ask. But the whole nature of asking the questions and talking to children this way is to make the investment of a relationship.
Yes.
And I remember, you know, when we were going to Bible college, we were working at the Avalon School, and we were working with severely emotionally disturbed young men and women.
Yes.
And they were in this group home, and it was very challenging. But the most rewarding part of it was when we just didn't fulfill our 8 hours of work for 8 hours pay. In other words, we weren't just babysitting them. We developed a relationship with some of these young people.
Yeah.
And in some instances, some of these young people actually physically harmed themselves. But when we had the opportunity, we would say, you know, why do you do that? In other words, we wanted to develop relationship with these children. That was the best part of working there as a child care worker.
Yeah.
You were developing a relationship with them.
Beautiful.
You weren't just working to get your paycheck. Mm-hmm. You cared, you loved, you invested. It's the same thing with children.
Yeah.
When we have that mentality and we say, look, we're going to have a relationship, not just rules and regulations, but a relationship, it makes all the difference in the world.
Absolutely. Can you imagine being a youth pastor because it's well-paying or, you know, it's stress-free or, you know, and I would say the same. Going to my job, I do not think of it at all as a job.
Yeah.
I never look at it that way. Yes, I have accountability to authority here. I have to register a certain amount of hours. That's not a problem. But I'm just saying, like, when we have in our minds that we're fulfilling the call of God for our lives, which is to be the stewards of instruction over kids that's going to help them in our ministry for years to come.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, what a possibility, what an opportunity. And the people that do those kinds of things, to parents that have to deal with strong-willed children, to teachers that have to deal with strong-willed children, to youth pastors that have to deal with strong-willed children.
Yeah.
Keep the faith, keep fighting, you know, keep the consistent instruction. And a lot of these kids in their older age, when they are more successful in lives, look back and go, wow, there were some patient people in my life.
Yeah.
To God be the glory. I want to lead like them.
Amen. And as we said earlier, the essence of James Dobson's wisdom in terms of making a difference in the lives of children is, he said, just get them through it.
Yes.
Yeah. That's the great goal.
Yeah.
Friends, thanks so much for joining us. We've run out of time, but we certainly appreciate you tuning in and listening today. Mm. We'll be back tomorrow for the Thursday edition of the Grace Hour. We hope you'll join us then. Don't forget to subscribe to the show on YouTube, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and more. Until tomorrow at the same time, have a great day.